Welcome to Theatre Voice. I'm talking to Madhav Sharma, who's currently appearing as Leonardo in Much Ado About Nothing at Stratford. Welcome to Theatre Voice, Madhav.
Thank you very much, Suman.
This Much Ado About Nothing is the production by Iqbal Khan, part of the World Shakespeare Festival, and it's set in Delhi. Yes. I understand it's also your debut at the Royal Shakespeare Company.
Yes, it is.
So you've become a Shakespeare Wala. How does that feel?
Well, since I started as a Shakespeare Wala, since my entire career started with the Kendalls touring India and going around the Far East and all the countries there, like Malaysia and Brunei and Sarawak and Singapore and Hong Kong, etc., so it's like a full circle now. I only came to this country to do Shakespeare at Stratford. So after 50 years, I finally made it.
I know. It's great, isn't it?
So, yeah.
I mean, I don't think a lot of people know that you were part of the Jeffrey Kendall's touring company in India.
Well, I am. Unfortunately, I'm not in his book, which was ghostwritten, or in Felicity's, which was also partly ghostwritten, she tells me.
Yes, I've read both of them, and I was trying to find your name in the index, yeah. And I thought...
Well, if you see the film of Shakespeare, Wala, you'll see there's an actor called Pratap Sharma, who actually plays me in the film.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Okay. Very interesting. So Shakespeare in India, there's a very big connection. It's been going for a long time.
Well, you see, there are two of us in the cast are both born and bred in India. Out of the 21, there are only two who are born and bred in India.
Is that yourself and the guy who plays your brother?
No.
It's the one
who plays Claudio, Sagar.
Oh, I see, Sagar.
Who I think is very good. And for us, of course, Shakespeare is like mother's milk, and we love it, unlike those born abroad or in Britain who seem to think Shakespeare is a chore. So it's a love, so there's no problem with Shakespeare for Indians, because Shakespeare is very Indian.
Absolutely, he'd be writing Bollywood scripts. People say so many things like that
Well, rather Bollywood scripts would be based on him, as they frequently are.
True. There have been a few Indian films that have taken their inspiration from the Shakespeare's two darker plays.
In fact, the first Shakespeare I ever did was with Shashi Kapoor in Bombay, when he played Cassio in Othello and I was Rodrigo. So that's going back a long
time. So Shashi Kapoor,
of
course, is Jeffrey Kendall's son-in-law.
Yes, he was then, yes. And of course, she's dead now, as you know. But
Jennifer, we're talking about.
And he's the youngest brother of Raj Kapoor, with Shami Kapoor is the middle brother, and Prithviraj Kapoor's sons. So
another theatre family of India.
A very great theatre family, one of the greatest in India. Yes.
Okay, so 50 years later, you've made your RSC debut.
Yes.
It's a Much Ado But Nothing, set in Delhi.
True.
Very modern interpretation. What is this thing about, you know, somehow the comedies of Shakespeare tend to become Indianized? I'm thinking of The Twelfth Night that was on in the West End, and earlier this year The Globe had some visiting companies.
Well, I think Shakespeare can be set anywhere, and he works, because Shakespeare writes about people. Our production happens to be set in contemporary Delhi, but it's not about India. The play is Much Ado About Nothing. Those people just happen to be in India. And I think you can do Shakespeare's comedies, tragedies, anything set anywhere. After all, the play was not set in England. It was set in Sicily, in Italy, which is very similar to India in its value systems of paternalistic arranged marriages, etc., etc. And it's very difficult to do that in a Western context today, where nobody believes in all that. And the idea of chastity before marriage, I know it's going in India too, I'm told, but certainly in the India that I know and was brought up in, it was very important. So plays like Much Ado, plays like Winter's Tale work beautifully in an Indian setting for me.
So it's set in modern Delhi, as we say, and
yes.
Some of the language has got the Indian inflections and the music and so on. You know, like you say, the Benedict's the best man in all India and so on. But I find it a little strange that you still keep the setting as Messina. People never say it's, this is Delhi, if you know what
well,
I mean.
Well,
you know,
this is a question you should really ask the director. There are inconsistencies, of course. I personally think you should either Indianize everything or not Indianize any of the names, because suspension of disbelief is what theatre is about. And the moment you say this is Delhi, Messina could be a little part of Delhi. It could easily be. But if you want to change it to something like Pahadganj or whatever, then you can do that. And that's up to the director, really. We actors have very little power. You must realize that.
Oh, I don't believe you.
It is true. It is true. We do what the directors tell us, and they rule us with a rod of iron.
Really? So
yes.
Has working on the show been like that?
Yes. I mean, he's... I think he's tried to do his best, but he's born and bred in Birmingham, you see. He's been to India for 4 days on a research trip. And those of us who have brought up in India, we have a slightly different view of the Indian caste system, the class structures in India, sometimes. But he's been fun to work with, because what he has got is a radical mind. I mean, he studied mathematics for a couple of years at Cambridge, I believe, before he got his degree in London. But he's got it's very much an NRI view of India rather than an Indian view of India, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, but India is changing anyway. But I think the show itself, the setting works beautifully, and I think the cast are great. Subtleties of, you know, different things. Like in your scenes, for example, when Beatrice turns down the Shiv Garewal character, the prince, you know, she says you are like too expensive to wear every day, that line.
Yeah.
You kind of... you know, nudge her to be a bit more respectful, and yes, there are other things like that.
Of course. But that's what fathers do with daughters.
No.
Quite a lot of fathers do. I mean, we must remember it is a play, after all. We're not doing a documentary about India. So I would hate anyone to think we are trying to say this is India. We have set it in India, and some of those Indian values still exist, even in a modern India that's changing. Because India is a vast subcontinent, as you well know, Sumanji, and every couple of hundred miles, it's a different India. And everybody in India thinks they know India, and people from Renoir downwards have made films about India. Satyajit Rai's films tell you a different, show you a different India. Bollywood films show you a different India. That's one of the things I love about India, that it's so diverse, it's so magical, it's so spiritual, it's so venal, it's so materialistic, it's so spiritual. It's a bunch of contradictions, and I love India for that.
And we see some of those contradictions presented in the characters of this particular show, in that sense. I mean, you've got
Well, if that's what you get, I'm delighted. I think that's how it should be.
Well, I mean, this is the second time I've seen the show. I'm really enjoying the show, and I can see... you know, how it's bedding in that sense.
Well, I'm trying not to... You see, I'm one of those actors who doesn't like to say this is what we're doing. I'm more interested in what you get from it and then learn from that, because the audiences usually tell you what's right and what's not right, what's working and what's not, in my experience. And I trust the audience, and I think the audience are usually way ahead of the actors and the director, I'm afraid. And Shakespeare is so clever... he never, never speaks down to an audience. He gives them the chance to work and they use their imagination. And I just think he's the greatest playwright. Therefore, I'm particularly delighted to be doing it. You know, I slept the very second day I was here. I came to Stratford to make sure I'd seen where it was. And when I was at RADA, I came and slept on the steps of Stratford with Terry Hands, Susan Fleetwood and Rod Beecham to be first in the queue to see Paul Scofield's Lear. And Terry Hands then became co-artistic director with Trevor Nunn for 25 years of that place. He kept offering me Morocco, and I kept turning it down because I didn't want to be a black actor. I wanted to be an actor who happens to be brown-skinned. So it's a battle I've fought for 50 years. I've been corresponding with Peter Hall for 50 years about it.
Really?
Yes.
And now
if you look at an old copy of ISIS, the Oxford University magazine, you'll find there's a whole debate with Peter Hall and me from years ago.
About
multiculturalism in Shakespeare, because I was always arguing that what colour is a fairy king, for example, Oberon can be any colour, what colour is Puck, where is Illyria, you know, we're not really doing it as if it's set in Turkey, it could be anywhere. That's the genius of Shakespeare, and I think the genius of Shakespeare, and in fact there are many other playwrights, but not as well known as him, I think Kalidasa is one, who've got something, they capture something unique about the human spirit, and when you get that right... if you have the honesty to play the truth, it doesn't matter where you set it. This could be set in Timbuktu, it would work.
Yeah, I mean, that's the strength of a good story and a good writer. But it's lovely from the point of view of an audience to be able to see it in a contemporary sense, located in a specific history, because it helps you sometimes make sense of the words.
Absolutely.
Like this time around, I felt I was listening to the text more.
Right.
And this is one of the plays that I actually read when I was in school.
Ah,
you know,
very nice.
I mean, I went to see the Caesar, the Julius Caesar, that's on right now in the West End, which is an all black UK-based cast.
Yes.
And it's not a play I know well, but again, I went to see it another time, and you get more out of the words when you listen to them.
Well, yes, but you see, now that's meant to be set in Africa. There are some West Indian accents in it. We have to be careful that in trying to be populist, and indeed, I think anything that makes theatre more accessible is a good idea. Anything that brings people like Shakespeare to everybody, it's not an elitist thing. But we should also be accurate in our work. I'm very conscious that, for instance, I've seen productions where the Indianness is very generalized, which is why I like in our production that we're all different Indians, we're different kinds of Indians, different class structures, different educational structures, etc., etc. So I base my character on two Indian generals whom I know, one of whom happens to be Hindu Punjabi, another one who happens to be a Tamilian, actually, but he's a general. And I looked at them and I saw what happened, and so I'm playing somebody who might have been in the army, who's now probably a politician and a businessman. So I decided that way he was educated, so I give him a different kind of voice to say my servant would have a different kind of accent. So you have Punjabi accents. You see, our cast consists of Sri Lankans, Mauritians, Trinidadians, Singaporeans, people from Manchester, people from Birmingham, only two of us are Indian born and bred, as I said, out of 21. Mm. So I think if you can get the feeling, a little bit of a taste of India, a little bit of that curry sensation, I think that's fantastic.
But in terms of your own sort of approach as an actor, yes, to a particular role, I mean, you were in The Madness of King George, yes, playing Dr. Warren, and it's a completely non-Indian character, yes, in that sense.
Yes.
How do you approach a role then?
You approach any role in exactly the same way. You look at what the role is, you look at where the play is set, and depend this production, I very nearly didn't do it, because when I was originally told by the director it was going to be an all-Indian cast, I hesitated, because I believe in multiculturalism in theatre. I'd have liked to have seen some white faces like you see in India. I'd have liked to have seen different kinds of people in it as well. And that's why I'm delighted we've got Rob Mountford playing the Pandit, for example, who's a half Kashmiri adopted by white British parents, as it happens. So I like that. Personally, I very nearly said no, because I'm very much against separatism, personally. But I understand why it needs to happen sometimes, and why some specific art forms are best done by the people who have trained in it for years and years and years. But when I was a boy in Bangalore, John Maher came and sang Carnatic music. John Maher, who now runs in the School of Oriental and African Studies, the professor of music, he came and he sang Carnatic music. And I cried in the Indian Institute of Culture. And I remembered then that art is universal. It's for everybody. And I was so flattered that he sang Carnatic music, and I said to him, one day I will do Shakespeare in Stratford, and I hope you'll come and see it.
Okay, so, but in terms of your approach, you said it's the same. I mean,
well, in that a character is, you look at what the truth of the character is, what his emotional truth is, and then you decide on the voice, the look, everything about him. How he looks. I mean, I don't have a twirly moustache that I have for this character, because that's what we decided for Leonardo would be best. As Dr. Warren, I used a different kind of makeup, so I looked like I might be Jewish or I might be part Indian, but you weren't sure. But I played him vocally with no Indianness at all, so you never thought of an Indian while you were watching that play. Whereas here, obviously, I'm playing a Punjabi, Hindu Punjabi, so I had to learn Punjabi accent. And there was a lady called Zabarjat Naseem, who came and helped us with the Punjabi accent. That was wonderful, because I don't know Punjabi accent as well. I can do a Bengali much, much more easily. I can do a Tamilian quite easily, because that's my natural voice. So you learn, just as if you're playing a Cockney or a Geordie or anybody else, you have to learn the accent. You have to learn what creates the accent, what sort of background, social background you come from, what sort of economic background you come from, what sort of educational background you come from.
So you all had a voice coach, a dialect coach, and so in terms of
we were up to us to use it. And I must say, working for the Royal Shakespeare Company has been a delight, because without the voice department, I would have had lots of problems. They're wonderful, the voice department here. It's headed by a wonderful lady called Lynn Darnley and Cecily Berry, of course, the doyen of voice teachers. I was actually taught by somebody even before her, Clifford Turner at RADA. But they came and supported us in understanding the text. And it's interesting how the music of Shakespeare and the meaning often goes together. And if you get it right, you don't have to do every line with an are, ah, oo, because then it destroys the rhythm. Sometimes it helps. In prose you can do that, but in verse, Much Ado, 70% of it is in prose, only 30% of it is in verse. And about 85% of that verse is in my hands. So I'm very careful that when I use the Punjabi or I use Hindi or I use something, I do it between the lines or at a place that is accurate.
But in terms of that and the voice training, I mean, most of the Punjabi or Hindi words they're just like the odd words that have been put in. So, I mean, how did that come about in the context of fitting it into the Shakespearean meter, if you like?
Well, you don't do it in snatches? The middle. Well, I don't do it in the middle of a line.
I don't think anybody did. Everybody seemed to have done it in the beginning, or you might have had the odd word like putter or...
Yes, what we've done is change words like son to putter.
Mm.
And I have one line in Punjabi when I say Ganavana Tayarogya.
Is the music ready or
that's
something?
That's it. And that's fine. But I mean, but other than that, I don't use much Punjabi as far as I can remember. I think I say somewhere else I've got one other.
No, I'm just trying to understand, like, were all of you actors just said, told that maybe you can stick in the odd word, or did you.
No, we were told actually that.
How to use those words.
No, we only used the words that had been decided in rehearsal with the director. We always went back to the original text, which by which I mean the first folio, and I'm particularly keen that we shouldn't muck about with Shakespeare's words too much. Not that the word is, not that the text is sacrosanct, but I wouldn't like to disturb the meter of Shakespeare, and I think if you change something of Shakespeare, I want a good reason for changing it. So I don't mind changing son to putar. We were going to change lords to maharaj, but then we decided not to. The director decided that, so we followed that. So I don't do Maharaj when I might do to my lord.
But you've got the song, like Meera sings it and Balthazar sings Sigh No More Ladies, that particular song, which has been translated.
It has been recomposed. The tune has been composed in an Indian way, that's all, in a modern Indian way.
Yeah, but the lyrics have also become...
No, the lyrics
bilingual.
Have not changed. What they've done is they do a bit in Punjabi and then they do the bit in English exactly as it is in Shakespeare.
Right.
They don't change the word, sigh no more ladies, that's absolutely in Shakespeare.
Yeah.
In Balthazar. I mean, Meera's character doesn't sing it. I didn't, somebody did.
Somebody did, yes.
They got some expert to do that.
Yeah.
But Meera's character, Beatrice, actually doesn't sing the song in the play. That's been put on here for our production by the director and by Meera. But Balthazar, who plays my brother's son in this production, in fact, Balthazar is not. He's in the original play, he's a servant to the prince. But right. In our production, because we had so many actors who had to fit in the roles, we thought it fitted just as easily. It doesn't make much difference. So he's now my nephew, and he says, so he calls me Chachaji, you know, etc. Like Beatrice calls me Mamaji, because we've made decisions about how we're related to each other, etc.
Okay. I mean, talking of conflating characters, also the Verges character has become a woman and it's mixed in with Ursula's...
With Ursula's character.
Yeah, and she plays the wife.
And she's been made the wife of Dogberry. It stems from the idea, I think. I mean, these are questions you should really talk to Baal
about.
Yeah,
I'm sort of laying everything about on you.
No, that's okay, but I can tell you what happened. No need to apologise, but I just don't want to put words into the director's mouth. I think his idea was... to make the watch part of the household, like a kind of amateur security firm when the family has a gathering, etc.
Which kind of sits well in the Indian context, because everybody has that sort of a security.
So once he had made that decision and they weren't a separate force, then he had to decide, he thought he might as well make Verges and Ursula the same character and then have her married to Dogberry, because it makes sense. Because often you get servants from the same village in wherever they come from. In this case, actually, of course, the Verges character is a Gujarati and he's a Sikh Punjabi. But that's fine too, because the mixed marriages do occur. Yeah. But it's an idea of the director, and it's really one you should talk to him about.
Okay, well, we're just trying to clarify it as a matter of fact, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting in this particular production of Much Ado is the fact that you get to see the dark side of the story of the malevolent brother for a start, and the fact about the girl being dishonored. You know, it's quite a dark production in a way, as well as quite a funny one. I mean, there are those
But more and more productions are exploring the darker side. You see, he developed this, don't forget he'd already written Taming of the Shrew. I mean, Shakespeare plays with this idea of the role of women and the role and chastity and marriage all the time in several plays. He does it in Winter's Tale memorably after this. He develops this idea and he plays with time quite a lot too. And it's fascinating to see what he does. I mean, it's so humane. I know that nowadays in the Western world particularly, I'm sure it's true in some big cities in India and less so in the more rural areas of India in my experience, but the idea of chastity isn't so important here as it still is in large parts of India and in large parts of Italy. And that's why this play was written in, set in Sicily and not set in Guildford or wherever, or in Essex. You couldn't do it set in Essex today, could you, in 2012. It's difficult to do.
You're saying that some of the stuff that Shakespeare talked about doesn't have a resonance in the modern context.
No, I'm saying some modern societies are refusing to accept what I believe are eternal truths. I think most families care about ideas like that. I think some of modern feminism, for example, seems to suggest... See, there's a change we've made in our production that is worth noting. In Shakespeare's original play, Leonato had a wife called Imogen, who never speaks throughout the play. She's silent, so she goes along with everything that is going on. She's cut from our production.
Right.
Now, that's interesting to me, because it also says that a certain generation of women still hold those values. Modern generation maybe are experimenting with stretching those values this way or that way. What's right or wrong is not for me to say. If you were my daughter, I would certainly be worried about... your purity and your chastity and so on, possibly. I don't know, but since I don't have a daughter, luckily I don't have that problem.
No, but even if your wife's part is cut out of this play, the Beatrice character, I mean, she still preserves her virtue, even though
she
might appear to be an outrageous
flirt
in that sense. You know,
she just speaks her mind. She's like a strong Punjabi girl who speaks her mind. I love her. I love her character. And I love the fact that she's an orphan in my family and I look after her. And she's like the son I never had, in a way. My character, I mean, Leonardo, me. And Hero is my daughter, whom I see more like a doll, like a kind of a princess, whom I expect, not the real person. I'm more in love with Beatrice, is like my putter, really. And the Hero is more like my idealized idea of womanhood. And Shakespeare asks interesting questions, like Beatrice and Benedict, of course, are older than the other couple. They become friends first, till eventually they marry. So he's arguing, whereas Claudio and Hero, they've just met, they just look at each other, there's a bit of lust, a bit of excitement, chemical reaction. But who knows whether that's going to last or not. Shakespeare's saying it is better to be friends in some ways to find out what a real marriage is, because a marriage is more than just sex, is what he says.
No, I understand that. But also I think it's completely sort of true to the nature, because they are younger. They sort of...
Of course, they're hot blooded.
Yes, of course. All that makes sense in that
context. Makes total sense.
But let me just ask you something else. You just said that you were against this whole idea of separatism in casting and theatre.
Yes.
This has been one of your things.
Yes, it's been all my life.
But, I mean, it's still quite historical that this is the first time the Royal Shakespeare Company has a show on, which has got a completely Asian cast. I know they've
had... Is it?
I think so.
What about Arabian Nights that they did here? What about Midnight's Children that they did?
Well, Midnight's Children, yes, but that wasn't like a Shakespeare. That was like a contemporary show.
It was modern writing.
Oh,
I see, right.
But I don't know. I'm not sure about
I don't
about
know if they've done an all-Asian Shakespeare. I have no idea. But I would prefer...
You don't want
just
to
as a, I don't particularly think there's any great merit in it. It's quite nice to do it. But
I think there's a great merit in it.
Well,
I mean,
for me, there isn't. I mean, you asked me the question. I have to be honest and tell you the answer.
Yeah.
For me, yes, I can understand why, because it gives opportunities for people. But I like to see, just as if I have to do Greek play, I have to learn about Greek society, learn how to do that. If I do a play set in England, I have to learn about the England of that day. In the same way, I'd have liked some English people here learning about India and about Delhi. I mean, J.B.S. Haldane lives in India, who's an Englishman. J.B.S. Haldane, one of the greatest biologists of our generation. He loved India so much, he's actually become an Indian citizen and lives there. There are lots of people like... Mark Tully, the BBC man, for example. India and Britain have had a love-hate relationship for nearly 400 years, off and on. And there is something very special about that relationship. And I think I would like to see actors in any production, if it's a Russian production, if it's a thing, I'd like us all have to learn about each other's cultures, because I believe in multiculturalism. I demonstrated against apartheid all through the 60s and 70s, because initially in South Africa it was the same problem. The first schools for blacks were built with a good intention, but then it becomes atrophied into a kind of separatism. And that worries me, that's all. I'm not against productions set in any particular place, but I think all actors should make an effort to learn about different places, just as audiences do. And I think that's the glory of theatre, because I'm with Picasso, who said that art is a lie that enables you to tell the truth. The truth is not reality. It's not documentary. Theatre is about suspension of belief. It's about imagination. It's about the text of the writer. They are the most important things for me. But that's only my opinion, and I could be wrong.
Well, no, I you could be right as well. But I think, I mean, you know, I'm not against this idea of having some plays which may have specific casts, because I think it doesn't necessarily mean that we are not being multicultural when we...
No, but I spent years and years and years where they said, well, this play is set in England, so we'll just have English people in it. Like, I would never have been able to play Dr. Warren in Madness of George III if there wasn't a multicultural attitude, because I'm not English.
Yeah, so I think we, in that sense, we share the same values. But what you're saying is that...
It has to be both ways, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Just as I'm against racism of any kind, you see. And therefore, I mean, I couldn't do Kathakali because I haven't trained for 20 years in Kerala. If I had, I would. But I would never say only a Keralite can do Kathakali. I would never say that.
Yeah,
for example.
People don't do that anymore.
No, they don't.
So you have to do. You have to practice. If you can practice,
exactly.
It, then you have
if you want, like John Maher singing Carnatic music,
yes,
which is one of the joys of my life that I think about every time I get depressed. I think about John Maher sitting in Bangalore when he sang Carnatic music. Was the day I knew that I had a chance to do Shakespeare in England. Because he came to South India and he sang Carnatic music. Now that takes courage.
But how long ago was that then?
That was 50. I've been in England for 50 years.
Oh, right.
So it was before that, it was 60 years ago nearly. He'd been at Oxford with my cousin, and my cousin had invited him, and he came and he sang. And it was a moment, that was a magical moment in my life.
So have you asked him to come and see this show?
Not yet.
Okay,
not
but
yet.
Do you know him well?
I used to know him quite well. I haven't seen him for years. Right. I don't want to embarrass him by telling him that he changed my life, but he did.
Okay, well, I'm sure
he was one of the people
to the interview
did.
And hear it. But
I
can I just ask you... yes, I hope he does too. Can I just ask you kind of a last question before we wind up our interview?
Yes, of course.
What about the rest of the associated setting of the show, you know, in terms of the whole of modern India, modernity, being around, like the cast walking in through different things? There's a whole Indian bazaar atmosphere going on about that out there.
I think that's quite nice, because I think it reminds me of old Delhi rather than, you know, it depends which bit of Delhi you're talking about. But if you go near the Red Fort, etc., you know, I mean, India is about bustle, about people. We've got 1.3 billion now. When I first left India, there were 300 million. It now seems 1.3 billion. I can barely imagine it. When I go back now, the culture shock, when I was a boy in Bangalore, it was a garden city. I could bicycle around Bangalore on my bicycle easily. Today you go there and it's all full of high-rise blocks, and there are some good things because of that. The economy of India is flourishing and so on and so forth. I mean, you should read my nephew's book, India After Gandhi, by Ramachandra Guha. It's one of the most wonderful books about India.
So you think the bazaar atmosphere is great?
I think it's great. Oh, I do think.
Milieu of the story.
Because I think it's lovely to have the audience, from the moment they walk into the theatre, come into something unfamiliar, something that's Indian. That's India, and they're offered samosas. They can buy a sari if they want one, and they can buy, you know, Indian incense sticks or whatever they want, you know, Western idea of India, if you like. But nonetheless, so by the time they come into the theatre, they're ready. And we have a pre-show even on stage, for the servants are going about their daily business. You've got Dogbury doing the drain, somebody else doing the cooking, the vegetable wala coming in and talking about bangan and chilies and, you know. And that's great.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's amazing. I suppose the only thing is I was hoping is, like, could one smell the India?
Oh, you wouldn't know that be nice? Wouldn't
I don't mean the nice incense, but just like how the sand is in the morning, you know, when the rain falls, there's just a certain...
It's very difficult to get that.
Yes.
Maybe one day somebody will come up with a system whereby we can do that. I would love that.
Yeah.
I would love the smells of India, because it's one of the things I... When I go to India and I get off the plane, I always kiss the ground. And I can just smell India. But unfortunately nowadays it's more smell of diesel than anything else. But there is a strange mixture, a heady atmosphere of spices and unfamiliarity and total familiarity. It's India's changing all the time and it's so exciting.
So, and being in the show is as exciting as that, isn't
it? Oh, indeed. It is very exciting. And I'm delighted. It makes me want to go again to India immediately after this is over, which I will do.
The show is on here at Stratford and then it's coming to London.
Yes, it's going to the West End and we finish there at the end of October. And who knows after that what will happen to it. That might be the end of it. It might not. You never know. So we'll wait and see. In my job as an actor, whatever God wills is what happens. If you'll forgive my being so pie about it all. But I'm fatalistic. I've got that bit of India still in me.
Really?
Yes.
Well, Madhav Sharma, I want to thank you for talking to Theatre Voice right now. I mean, we could carry on for a while, but I know you've got another show to do.
Sumanji, thank you very much. I've known you many years and it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
No, thank you so much.